This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Egyptian media report a spotty turnout, with local correspondents claiming heavy participation in Egypt's second largest city of Alexandria and low turnout in the southern tourist locale of Luxor, where a heat wave appeared to be keeping some away from the polls.
That's Edward Yerenian reporting on the Egyptian election. Details coming up also. In Kenya, several prominent newspaper columnists resigned to protest what they say is an erosion of media freedom. And U.S., Africa, and European naval forces have begun an 8-day naval exercise in the Gulf of Guinea. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, in 2005, four young Congolese refugees in western Uganda opened a school for kids like them who had been separated from their families when they fled conflict in neighboring countries. Today, the school counts about 500 students and continues to provide free education to refugee children who are unaccompanied or whose families cannot afford to pay. Halima Tumani reports from the Kiangawali refugee settlement in western Uganda.
Just come running. Please, they are beginning from here. You see that?
A physical education class is going on at Koburu's primary school. The school name is a combination of Congo, Burundi, Uganda, Rwanda, and Sudan, the countries of origin for refugees living in western Uganda. The school was named by its founders, four teenagers living at the Changwali refugee settlement.
And so with the friends, we thought maybe we can find ways to bring new hope in our community. And that's when we started creating Koburu's International Youth Organization Transform Africa.
The boys did manual labor to raise money. Joseph Munyambaza, now 27, remembers that with the first $150 they earned, they bought textbooks for the initial 16 students.
We used to work in the community, work for farmers, and then they give us small money, which we'd use to buy textbooks and other materials for the most needy children. And among ourselves could serve as tutors. We now have our own farms. So we farm, and then when the crops get ready, we use the product for food.
The school also sells some crops from the farm to cover costs, and families that can afford it are encouraged to pay about $16 in fees. Outside donations help cover the teacher's salaries. The first class was held under a tree that still stands in the school compound. The school now boasts of four classroom blocks, serving 500 children from lower to upper primary classes. At the Changwali refugee settlement, many residents have lived here for about 7 or 8 years. They say they won't return home to Congo until stability is assured. Okoboy John Bosco, the head teacher at Koburu, says the school has helped refugee children build new lives.
Some of them are as early as the age of theirs now. They are talking of some early projects that can venture into help the community. So I see there's a really big change that has taken place in their lives. And I think the long-term change is yet to come as they pursue their studies. And I believe with such initiatives within the refugee settlements, I think the best can be achieved from these kids.
10-year-old Ketrasha Traori Ibambas is in primary 6.
I want to be a doctor because the people in this community are suffering from cholera and they are lacking doctors. So I need also to be a doctor so that I can be able to prevent any other disease.
The school may soon see more new students. A fresh wave of communal violence in the northeastern DRC has pushed tens of thousands of Congolese refugees into western Uganda this year. The UN says most of the new arrivals are women and children. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Changwali, Uganda.
Kenya has remained a beacon of hope in sub-Saharan Africa, with a relative free independent media. However, a recent decision by the government to temporarily shut down three television stations accused of covering the symbolic swearing-in of opposition leader Raila Odinga has generated a heated debate about media freedom. A group of columnists from The Nation, the country's largest newspaper, resigned today in protest. What they say is government interference. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Eight columnists who have been regular contributors to The Nation group of newspapers have withdrawn their columns to protest what they call editorial interference. Maina Kiai is a columnist and well-known human rights activist.
Thankfully, public opinion is no longer in the sole grip of those who buy ink by the barrel. We are encouraged by the emergence of more egalitarian models for accessing and sharing information and will not be powerless witnesses to the silencing of even one voice, however disagreeable those in power might find it. It is with regret that we hereby collectively resign as independent columnists from the Nation Media Group. We assure our readership that we intend to continue to be heard and to engage with readers through making use of such models for free thought and the free exchange of ideas.
The group complains that the paper is working for the government, which undermines its credibility. Kwamcheti Makoha is another columnist.
So even in our own environment, that we are talking about government inserting itself in how media does its work. But it's not just government. Even private organizations insert themselves in media. And it's not just the politicians, religious movements, businesses. They will always try to see if they can control and manage the media. What we object to is that journalists don't have the space to defend and to push back. And our role as journalists, our calling as journalists and as public communicators, is to defend the space for telling the truth.
Their complaints come a day after some reporters said police roughed them up as they tried to cover the return of opposition leader Miguna Miguna. He flew into Nairobi Monday, 6 weeks after he was deported. However, he was not allowed to leave the airport for more than 24 hours, and journalists there were pushed out of the area. Kenyan authorities have maintained that the government is committed to a free, independent press as a vital component of any healthy democratic society. Joe Mucheru is Kenya's cabinet secretary for the Minister of Information, Communication and Technology.
I want to assure you that the government is determined to protect the media working space and will take punitive measures against those who direct violence against reporters. On the same note, I also believe media houses should play a greater role in supporting and protecting their journalists. The employers should offer adequate and relevant working tools and attractive remuneration to motivate journalists and compensate them for their hard work. Similarly, there is need for the Media Council of Kenya to instill professionalism amongst members to weed out quirks.
In January, Kenyan authorities ordered the temporary closure of three major television networks to keep them from airing live coverage of the opposition leader's mock inauguration ceremony. The stations were later allowed to resume normal broadcasts after a week or so. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
And in more news from Kenya, a standoff continues at Nairobi's international airport, where controversial attorney Miguna Miguna is trying to re-enter Kenya after being deported last month. Miguna's lawyers filed a suit today against the government seeking to have the opposition figure granted free access to his native country. A high court justice ordered his immediate release and sent a court appearance for Miguna tomorrow morning. The High Court ruled last week that he could return to the country. A dual national, Miguna was stripped of his Kenyan passport before he was forced to leave the country February 6th. He is traveling on his Canadian passport. Miguna arrived yesterday but quickly became embroiled in a dispute with immigration officials that escalated into efforts to put him on a flight to Dubai. He refused to leave, shouting and clinging to the plane's door before it finally left without him. Some journalists trying to cover the story were roughed up by security officials. Music. U.S., African, and European naval forces have begun an 8-day maritime exercise in the Gulf of Guinea called Operation Abangame Express. It's sponsored by the U.S. Africa Command, AFRICOM. Military and security personnel from 31 African and Western countries are taking part. They include Nigeria, Gabon, Ghana, Liberia, Senegal, Sierra Leone, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The goal is to improve regional cooperation and bolster the ability to respond to narcotics traffickers, pirates, and other sea-based illegal activities. The exercises are led by U.S. Navy Captain Eric Conzane, Commodore of the U.S. Military Sealift Command in Europe and Africa. Recently, he spoke with international journalists.
Exercises like this demonstrate that we are focused on three main things. First, building the defense capabilities of our African partners and regional organizations. Second, being prepared to respond to crises on the continent. And third, deterring and defeating transnational threats operating in Africa. We accomplish this through the use of real-world scenarios designed to increase and test the ability of Gulf of Guinea nations to address maritime threats.
Captain Conzane says the Gulf of Guinea plays a strategic priority in part because of its role in global oil markets and trade routes. He says maritime threats continue even though incidents of piracy and armed robbery at sea tended to be lower last year.
Illegal fishing management is one of the pillars of the main events. So we have the counter-piracy, search and rescue, boardings of ships, medical casualty response. But illegal fishing is one of the main events that go on for almost all the countries on a daily basis during the exercise.
He says the emphasis is on improving cooperation and coordination.
What we're doing is bringing together everybody in order to increase that information flow, which is the vast majority of the higher level work that goes on during the exercise. There are ships out at sea that are performing everything from the tactical, what we call the tactical level in the Navy, where they're practicing boardings on ships, all the way up to and including by the end of the exercise, taking the information that ships have taken from exercise piracy or exercise trafficking events, to taking that information and doing mock court trials to show the entire process throughout the intergovernment and interagency aspect.
This is the eighth time the Obangami Express exercise has been held over recent years. The U.S. undertakes similar maritime maneuvers with partners on other parts of the continent, including Cutlass Express in Eastern Africa and the Phoenix Express in Northern Africa. The current effort of the coast of Guinea will end on March 29th. U.S. officials say it's part of an overall strategy for Africa that focuses on defense, diplomacy, and development. You are listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. In Kenya, several prominent newspaper columnists resigned to protest what they say is an erosion of media freedom. And U.S., Africa, and European naval forces have begun an 8-day naval exercise in the Gulf of Guinea. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Egypt's presidential election went into its second day with some voters enthusiastic while other areas apathy dominated, as Edward Iranian reports from Cairo.
A marching band plays as bystanders crowded along the parade route on day two of Egypt's three-day presidential election in the town of Kasus in Egypt's Kalliopeia province. A few hundred people clapped and cheered to show enthusiasm as voters cast ballots at a nearby polling station. Egyptian media report a spotty turnout, with local correspondents claiming heavy participation in Egypt's second-largest city of Alexandria and low turnout in the southern tourist locale of Luxor, where a heat wave appeared to be keeping some away from the polls. Here in the capital, Cairo, voters crowded around some polling stations, while other polling stations appeared to be almost empty. A precinct chief in Kafr el-Sheikh province tells journalists that turnout was lighter Tuesday than a day earlier, although he said he expected more voters to turn out later in the day when temperatures were lower. Voting began Monday and ends Wednesday. President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi is expected to win. His only rival is Musa Mustafa Musa, leader of the Ghad party, who previously had endorsed another term for Sisi. Mohamed Fayek, head of Egypt's National Council for Human Rights, told journalists that voting appeared to be taking place without major glitches, but that some voters had expressed uncertainty about where they were registered to vote. Supporters of Sisi could be seen in parts of Cairo waving flags and wearing colorful patriotic garb, encouraging citizens who had not done so to go out and vote. At a Cairo sporting club in the leafy district of Zamalek, young men dressed in football garb played, apparently oblivious of the election taking place elsewhere. Security remains tight at polling stations, and police and military personnel stood at alert in various parts of the capital. A top military officer inspected a polling station in the Giza district of Do'i, discussing security with electoral officials. In the Giza district of Faisal, an elderly man using a walker told journalists he had come to vote to show his love for his country. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
In Zimbabwe, local civic organizations are urging the government to swiftly implement the African Charter on Democracy, Elections and Governance. It was signed by President Mnangagwa at the African Union Summit last week. Reporter Kudzaiza Nawash has the report.
Local civic organizations held a joint news conference on the recent signing of the African Charter on Democracy, Elections and Governance. The charter seeks to set standards for better governance. It was adopted on the 30th of January 2007. 45 member states to the Africa Union had signed it by last year. Blessing Gorejena, executive director of the Zimbabwe Human Rights Non-Governmental Organizations Forum, gives background on the charter.
It sets out international standards of good governance and democracy in such areas as rule of law, free and fair elections, and condemning unconstitutional changes of government.
As noble as signing the charter may sound, Gorejena says there are still steps to be taken to make the charter fully applicable and part of Zimbabwe's law.
While we welcome the government's will towards abiding by regional obligations, we urge the government of Zimbabwe to make further steps towards the ratification and domestication of the charter in line with Section 327 of the Constitution.
That section states that international treaties signed by the president can only be binding on Zimbabwe after parliament approves them and incorporates them into law. So it's up to parliament to push for adoption of the charter. Oke Machisa is with the Zimbabwe Rights Association.
A very hungry person obviously would need to get food. You cannot go for more kilometers without feeding this person. So naturally,
It's urgent. We are very hungry of democracy in Zimbabwe. We are very hungry of a free, fair and a credible election.
But the timing may be difficult. Zimbabwe is expected to hold an election soon, and parliament will be dissolved before then. Most parliamentarians are already in campaign mode as they seek re-election. Gore Jena says the bulk of the things in the charter are not new, as they are captured in Zimbabwe's constitution that has not been fully aligned with the law. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zhinawashe from Harare.
Cricket's image has been sullied by a pair of scandals that hit the sports world today in Southern Africa. The International Cricket Council announced that Rajan Nair, an influential board member of Zimbabwe's cricket governing body, has been banned for 20 years. Nair allegedly offered Zimbabwe captain Graham Cramer $30,000 to fix a match against the visiting West Indies last October. Meanwhile, three Australian players have been suspended from the country's third test in South Africa over a ball tampering scandal. Captain Stephen Smith, along with David Warner and Cameron Bankford, were being sent home immediately for scuffing up the ball to get more movement and gain. The incident was caught on TV cameras. Cricket Australia chairman David Peaver said the issue was an affront to the integrity and reputation of Australian cricket, and specifically for sports in general. The fourth test series is tied at 1-1 ahead of the third test that starts Friday in Johannesburg. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Linus Remkes, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Rex Tillerson's first official visit to Africa was also his last. He was ousted as U.S. Secretary of State just hours after returning to Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump has tapped CIA Chief Mike Pompeo to replace Tillerson as America's top diplomat. Tillerson's trip to Africa focused largely on China's growing influence on the continent. An in-depth discussion on what his abrupt exit means for U.S.-Africa policy on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa. VOA.
Hello. I'm Douglas Simpoga.
Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share the ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.